good morning and welcome to Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier is with us for a full hour, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email questions by going to WTOP.com. Also submit questions on our Facebook page or using Twitter. The hashtag is Ask the Chief. Now, here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, thanks for coming in every month. We appreciate it. Let me talk with something that's been in the news, I guess, since last night and this morning. And this is what appears to be a sexual assault at an elementary school in Northeast D.C. What's the very latest there?
I mean, I can just tell you the basic information I had as of late yesterday evening. All we know is that there was a adult male who entered the school, I believe asked to speak to someone in the school and was given an escort. And during the course of that escort, inappropriately touched a female student.
So whoever the adult was being escorted by another adult, a student. And they witnessed that. And how did it get reported?
I don't have those details. I mean, that's the most I've gotten so far. I know they're continuing to do some interviews this morning, so we'll know a little bit more later. But
is this a school that has a police officer in it or attached to it?
No, this is an elementary school.
Okay.
And I know that the school officials did send out notice to the parents yesterday afternoon right after it happened.
Do you know anything about a description, age, anything as far as a description of the suspect?
I'll try and get it for you in the next couple of minutes.
And this brings me to, I guess, a bigger question of, you know, I know D.C. Council is considering changing the requirements for reporting such an incident as this, that we all know about the Jerry Sandusky and Penn State episode. And so Phil Mendelson is proposing legislation that would broaden the requirements for who is required to report any kind of incidents of sexual assault in schools or government buildings and whatnot. What kind of numbers do you get as far as reports from mandatory reporters and others?
I don't have the exact number, but I can tell you my experience has been, especially with young people, school-aged children, we tend to see an increase in reporting during the school year because they confide in somebody in the school, not just sexual assault, but other types of neglect and abuse. So we tend to see the increase during the school year, which is good. It means that the guardians in our public education system are doing that reporting. So, but, you know, I don't have exact numbers. I think this expansion, though, basically requires any adult to report.
Right. That's
right now, it's people in the professions.
Coaches, teachers,
right,
principals.
But it should be anybody.
And let me ask you about the resolution of those investigations. How often do allegations actually turn out to be something that's actually founded, that there was really an incident?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, especially when you're dealing with children. And depending on how young they are, sometimes they'll report something that's very minor, and then later on we'll discover it's much more serious. And sometimes it's the opposite. They'll report something that's very serious that turns out to not have occurred or be much less serious. So we have a special way of interviewing children with our advocates in the community through the CAC, so Children's Advocacy Center. So, I mean, it's always very difficult when you're dealing with children and any type of abuse. It takes a little bit more time to get real good facts and determine what happened.
Is there a unit that specializes within the police department just on these types of reports?
Yes, youth division, our entire youth division. They handle all these types of cases, and that's what they're trained to do, and they work with those advocates.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here for the hour taking your questions. You can call, tweet, email, Facebook us, and we'll get your answers from D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. We're going to take a look at traffic and weather.
This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier joining us until 11 o'clock, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can send in questions via Facebook, also Twitter. Use the hashtag Ask the Chief. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, before we get to the phones, you have an update. You have a description of the suspect at the elementary school.
Yeah, it's not very detailed. The best description we have is a black male in his early 20s that was wearing all dark clothing. That's the best description we have right now. Of course, we'll continue to develop that working with the child involved.
And then to clarify, you said that the man was being escorted by a student. Who was the victim?
The student, yes.
The escort. the student that was escorting the man through the school was the victim as well.
Yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Great. Let's get to the phones. We've got Nancy calling from Northwest. Nancy, you're on with the chief. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know the penalty when residential burglar alarms go off and the police have to come and it's false alarms, and these happen, more than once frequently with the same resident.
That's a great question. Currently, there is no monetary penalty. We are, the police department at least, has proposed pushing legislation to make the district on par with the other jurisdictions, because the number of man hours that we spend responding to false alarms, and not just residences, but in commercial false alarms and repeat alarms, really waste a lot of resources. So I know that the administration is looking at the possibility of implementing that. But it really is, if you have an alarm system that's giving you repeated false alarms, I urge you to please do something with the alarm company, because it really wastes a lot of police resources.
Chief, let me follow up on a couple of stories that have been in the news. There was an accident yesterday, I believe two separate accidents. There's one about 13th and H Street where a car jumped the curb, hit a couple of pedestrians. What can you tell us about that?
Actually, the pedestrians weren't seriously injured, thank God. It appears right now that the driver of that car had some sort of medical emergency and lost control of the vehicle. We've had a couple of those cases like that just in the recent past few months. So the driver is hospitalized, and the pedestrian, minor injuries.
And then there was, at about the same time, I think a motorcade escorting the president of Georgia was going down the road, and a car hit one of your officers.
Yeah. A female motor officer was struck in that motorcade. I know that she was released from the hospital late last night. Fortunately, she did not have any broken bones.
And so was there charges there? I know it was somebody that was going around a bus or something that was parked waiting for the motorcade to go through. Were there charges on the driver that hit the officer?
I know that the information I got late yesterday afternoon is that the officer was not at fault, but I don't know if a citation was issued or not.
And then there was a police chase, a minivan the other night that ended in an accident that killed a couple of people. What can you update us there?
Well, actually, the pursuit by the officers had just begun, and the pursuing officers were not involved in the accident. It was literally one of the most horrific scenes I've ever seen. We had a call for a shooting, and there was a description. And as the officers got on the scene, they were flagged down by one of the victims that had been shot at. He gave a very good description of a van with a Virginia tag. Officers in that area went over the radio and broadcast that lookout. And as the lookout's being broadcast, an officer sees the van speeding through Upshur Street, up by the soldiers' home, running through stop signs. So that officer turns around to get behind the van, and two or three blocks from that location, he crosses over North Capitol, and there's a pretty big hill there, and the van loses control and hits a tree and then flips end over end. And as it's flipping down the hill, a police cruiser coming up the hill, the van lands on top of the police cruiser. So we had two officers injured. All three of the passengers in the van were unbelted, and all were ejected from the van.
Let's get to the phones. We've got Faith calling in from Rockville. You're on with the chief, Faith.
Yes, hi. Good morning, chief. I am calling. I am actually a real estate agent, and I got a call, which is kind of ironic, just yesterday evening from a person that lives in a community where one of my colleagues has a property listed for sale. She said that over the past couple of weeks that she has called the police because there have been several people hanging at this property, and she's waited and waited, and no one has ever responded to check out, you know, what appears to her to be suspicious activity, and apparently she must know who the homeowner is that has the house listed. In addition to that, she's even physically gone to the police department and told them what was happening or what appears to be happening, and has been told if it's not your property, not to worry about it. And what is a concerned citizen to do when, you know, people are getting vandalized, homes, et cetera, when if the police won't respond to a concerned citizen such as that?
First of all, if you stay on the line, I'd like to get some more details, have my staff get more details from you. But We've made suspicious activity a priority one report. If she called 911, I can actually get the information and pull and see once that call taker, you know, 911 is a completely different agency than the police department. Once they take that call, I can pull it and find out how long they held it before it was dispatched. If it was dispatched immediately, officers should, and we've asked that that be a priority one dispatch for us. And we run a lot of calls like that. I listen to the radio every day. I hear them being dispatched quite often. In terms of what was said at the police station, certainly, I'll look into the, what your friend told you. I know that if, in terms of entering somebody else's property, in order for us to make arrest for unlawful entry, we need to have the actual homeowner or at least permission from the homeowner to make an arrest. But this does not stop us from moving people off of the property.
But if there is a neighbor who is witnessing something going on in an adjoining property or whatnot, they certainly can call, and you certainly would respond. Is that what
Absolutely. We do all the time.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here until 11 o'clock, taking your calls, emails. Get us on Facebook or Twitter. We're going to take a look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
Our conversation with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier continues. This is Ask the Chief on WTOP. If you want to join the discussion, call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Submit questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Once again, here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let's talk about speed cameras. There is one particular speed camera that
Let's see, which one might that be?
That has been in the news of late. His name is Chef Jeff, and he admits getting nailed a couple of times by the new speed camera on Foxhall Road. And he has a guy out there right now with a sign warning motorists to avoid speeding through this spot.
Good. We appreciate that.
Do you? Let me ask you first about about that. That you don't, police don't have any problem with him standing up, so people putting out signs warning people that there's a speed camera down the road.
No, and he's not the only one that's done it. I've seen little warning signs that people in the neighborhood have put up and posted where the new mobile cameras go. No, I don't, because the goal is to have them slow down up there. You know, there's a merge where the lanes merge down into a single lane. The residents have repeatedly complained. So if he's going to help me slow them down up there, I'm all for it.
How many tickets?
I hope he slows down.
How many? I think he's just avoiding the road. How many tickets has that one speed? Do you know how many tickets that speed camera has issued?
You know, I looked at the numbers when it, there was a 30-day warning period. And then since the warning period, there's been almost 30 full days. And the number of citations were cut in half. So there was, I believe, 20,000 warning tickets and only 11,000 actual tickets. So as you can see, it's effective. I mean, the warning period really is the time for people, the regular travelers, to get that message. And we always see them drop off over time. And I bet you that will, that number will continue to drop by half over the next several weeks.
So that one camera on Foxhall has generated 11,000 tickets in the first month.
Let me get you the
month.
Exact number. I looked at the numbers this morning, but it's it's around
And
that.
Then I'll tell you what Chef Jeff's...
That tells you there's a problem there, doesn't it?
Well, let me tell you what some of the residents say is the problem. And I've had several people email me about this and say that, yes, while there was a 30-day warning period, some of those warnings took much longer to get mailed and get sent to the homeowners than did the tickets. And in fact, I think Chef Jeff says he got warnings that came after he got his tickets, and there was a much bigger time period elapsed between the time the warning was sent and received and between the time that the actual fine was sent and received. So why would there be that disconnect?
Well, first of all, the citations are and the warnings were all issued by DMV, so I'd have to defer to them to answer that. But just the fact, and I got the numbers, just the fact that the number of violators that were caught dropped in half seems like that might not have been the case for everybody, because a lot of people changed their behavior.
What were the
actual numbers? 20,000 warnings were issued and 11,000 tickets. So literally, that's about a 50% drop. And that's what we normally see. You know, people get that warning and then they start to modify their behavior. And that's really the goal. So,
do you know the average speed infraction, the average fine for those? Because Chef Jeff's was, I think he said, was $150. If I'm doing the math, 11,000 times 150, you're doing pretty well over there on Foxhall.
I think the fine, it all depends based on how much you're exceeding the speed limit. I think like 11 to 20 miles or something like that's like $125.
And at what point does it kick in?
When you speed.
Chief, are we...
Thanks, John Moore.
I know we try to ask you that every month. Let's move on. Let's stay in Upper Northwest and in the Northwest neighborhood because they've been having a lot of robberies. And I know that you've been up there talking to neighbors about that. What's going on as far as efforts to catch these people, to stop this, what I guess is a spike in robberies?
Well, there's two different areas in Northwest that have been having problems with robberies. There's the Shepherd Park area and then also in the Upper Northwest area, not too far from here, off Connecticut Avenue, AU Park area. But there are robbery patterns all over the city, in literally every area of the city. That's why we have kicked off this campaign now to offer reward money for those who will turn in others who are committing the robberies. And more importantly, those who will turn in the people that are fencing or reselling all these stolen phones. The drive, you know, I mentioned at the end of last year when we had all these great crime statistics that the single biggest challenge we face right now is people breaking into cars. And robberies, you know, armed robberies are down, but the running by and snatching phones from people, phones, iPods, tablets, and they're being resold. So we're offering anything from $1,000 to $10,000 for people to come forward and give us information. In order to be eligible for the reward, you got to call 202-727-9099, or you can text tip us, send us a text tip anonymously at 50411. But I think if I can offer more profit than the bad guys are getting from reselling them, maybe we'll have a little bit of a shot.
Where are you getting the money for the rewards?
This is a combination. You know, we've always offered reward money for violent crimes and homicide. We pay out about $500,000 a year for the past 3 or 4 years at least. We've really increased that. So this is a combination of our funding and Crime Solvers. Crime Solvers backs us up with a lot of this.
And then you mentioned that, you know, a lot of these are phones and whatnot that are being resold. I know that you would like to take the lead from, I guess, the UK, where they actually have a system in place that makes these phones less desirable.
Yeah, they actually in the UK, they got voluntary compliance from all of the service providers because they were having the same problem to implement a process that would, they call it bricking, brick the phones. So once a phone is stolen, obviously the owner can deactivate the SIM card so that their personal information is cut off. But what the thieves are doing is, and they're then, you know, re-upping the phone and getting service. They're selling it, you know, on the internet or on the street, and somebody can just provide service again. So what that would do is the service providers would agree that once a phone's been reported stolen, they would not provide service to that phone. So the phone would be useless.
And have you gone to Capitol Hill, to the federal government? I mean, who are you trying
to... I've talked to everybody.
Have you?
I've talked to the FCC chairman, who happens to live in Upper Northwest in one of the areas where the robberies are going on. He was very supportive and helpful. I've organized through the major city chiefs a resolution from the top major city police chiefs around the country because they're all seeing the same thing. And we're working now with the GSMA board, which is the largest fraud and securities commission that is the largest companies headed by AT&T.
And is it the phone providers, the service providers?
It's the service providers. They are the key.
They object to this?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're objecting to this. They just are they're willing to work with us on it.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here until 11 o'clock taking your calls on Ask the Chief. Now look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio with Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier. The number to call in is 877-336-1035. If you have a question for the Chief, 877-336-1035. You can send in questions via email by going to WTOP.com or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
And let's get a couple calls in right now. Charles is calling from Forestville. Charles, you're on with the Chief.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, Charles.
I'm at First and Massachusetts Avenue every day. I pick my wife up from Union Station. And the pedestrians will cross against the light. I asked one of your officers one day about D.C. police giving jaywalking tickets, you know, because they'll stop and you end up 3-4 cycles because that's a short light. And he tells me, well, we don't bother to write jaywalking tickets.
Well, first of all, I hope you're, well, there's an awful lot of cops that hang around down at Union Station. I hate to think that that was one of my cops and maybe one of the other agencies instead, but we write an awful lot of jaywalking tickets. Not only do we write a lot, But we actually have a focus campaign every year where we focus for several weeks around the whole D.C. region on Street Smart campaign, where we focus particularly on pedestrian violations. But there are thousands of tickets written for pedestrian violations every year. So whoever that officer was, I hope he wasn't a Metropolitan Police officer, but he was wrong.
Chief, let me ask you a couple of more stories that we'd like updates on. It was just, I guess, not too a couple weeks ago that an abandoned infant was found on the sidewalk, I think over in Northeast D.C. What has the autopsy come back on cause of death there, and how is the investigation going?
Cause of death is still undetermined, and you know, we may never know. I mean, it's a very young infant. There was no obvious cause of death. I know that there's still a lot of toxicology and pathology and other things that are testing underway, but we may never know what the cause of death was. We are we have just released a photograph of the towel. It is fairly unique looking. That asking again for the public's assistance. You know, we really put a real push to the public for people to provide information. We got a lot of tips in, but we want to push that again. So anybody that might have information based on, you know, new information that we're releasing, 727-9099. We're really trying to locate the parent.
Do you have any indication whether the baby came from the neighborhood, the city, or maybe from Maryland or Virginia, just far away?
We have nothing to let us, you know, have that level of detail of where this child came from.
Let me ask you about another issue, and that is, you know, I know that you coordinate or you cooperate with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the mayor has signed a resolution or an executive order on what information is and isn't shared. But there are some tenant advocates who are trying to get help for one of their own, Jai Shankar, a young man. And here's what happened to him. He called police to report a crime. He's living here illegally, it looks like. But he called police to report a crime. And police came and ran his information through the system, checked him for warrants. Turned out he had an immigration warrant for him, and now he's wearing...
He actually had a criminal warrant. It wasn't a civil warrant. It was a criminal warrant. It was in the national database.
Right. So let's not look at his individual case, but use that as a jumping-off case point, because what the mayor's office told reporters is that it is standard procedure that the police will run a warrant check on anyone who reports a crime. Is that your policy?
In this case, and I actually read the arrest paperwork, in this case there was cross-complaint. So when the officers arrived on the scene and started investigating one allegation from one person, a different allegation from another person, I think it's... In that example, it is common for us to run both complainants. You have cross complaints here. So I think the officers checking the names of both individuals was perfectly appropriate and I would say necessary. The second thing is this was not an immigration civil hold. This was a criminal warrant, and we're required to take custody.
But I believe the quote from the mayor's office was a little bit more broad, that it is...
So okay, let me correct that then.
Very good. Then please do. Tell us, what is the policy? If somebody calls in police to report a crime, do you then run a warrant
check? It is not routine to just run complainants through criminal checks. If during the course of the investigation there's some reason for the officer to feel that it is necessary, they certainly do and can. But it is not something we do in every case by any stretch of the imagination.
Let's get back to the phones. Let's talk to David. David is calling from the district. You're on with the chief, David.
Good morning. How are you? I had a question about those license plate scanners that I see on a lot of city vehicles and also on some police cars. And I was wondering if they were used for not just sort of traffic or motor vehicle issues, but also for law enforcement, say for criminal investigations. And if so, what agency manages those records and how long they're saved?
They can be used if there's a criminal predicate. So typically we will use them to locate stolen vehicles, carjacked vehicles, vehicles that are given in a lookout associated with another crime. So there's got to be a criminal predicate. We don't just kind of go in and it would be kind of fruitless to go in and look at license plate reads for any other purpose, because there's, you know, millions of reads daily. And that's kind of our general purpose for any use of any information. If there's a criminal predicate that would dictate we have the, you know, need to look at any type of record, we're going to use it. But other than that, we don't use it. And those records are stored for 3 to 5 years before they're purged.
Can other people get access to those records through, if somebody's suing somebody through a civil case or whatnot, are those records that can be subpoenaed or accessed by people other than law and government officials?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I've never seen a request come in where it would be released. I'd have to get back to you. I don't know. I don't know of any case where anybody's tried to get them.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your calls, emails, Facebook questions on Ask the Chief. Now look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
You're listening to Ask the Chief on WTOP with Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us by going to WTOP.com. You can also submit questions on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief Alan Blinder in the Washington Examiner this morning has a piece about the Office of Police Complaints being pretty much ineffective for almost the past year due to some internal squabbling, which I don't know that your department had too much to do. What is your... I mean, is the Office of Police Complaints an entity of the D.C. Police Department, or is it a standalone agency that...
It's an independent standalone agency, and it provides an alternative to members of the public to report complaints against the police department. We investigate complaints inside of MPD, but we also provide people with an option if they'd rather have an outside entity investigate complaints. They do far, far smaller numbers of complaints than we do. And I'm really not even sure what all that's about with this past year.
What is the impact, though, to the citizens who have some pending complaints with this board? I mean, how does this impact your relationship with the community?
Well, I don't know what the impact is to the number of cases. I mean, just from what I saw on the article, I think they only adjudicated 14 cases last year at the Office of Police Complaints. So if that's the, potential impact for this year, that's not significant. Plus, members of the public can always file complaints with both, with them and with us. Most of the complaints that they get over there are complaints of rudeness, unprofessional behavior, things like that. But we investigate those too, so I don't think it's that big a deal.
Let's get back to the phones. Earl is calling in. Earl, you're on with the chief. Earl, are you with us? Let's move on. Oh, hey,
yes,
Earl.
Yes, my name is Al.
All right, go ahead, man.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much, WTOP. My name is Chief. How are you? Good morning to you.
Hi, Earl.
Yeah, Al.
Al.
Alan.
Al.
Yes. Good to speak with you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. I would like to give a tip of a hat to Ms. Diane Groom. She is very professional. She did very good in Southwest. Also, quickly, very briefly, in Southwest Washington, D.C., where I live, there is little police patrol. And when they come around, they look like they have blinders on. They don't look for anything criminal or illegal. To be honest with you, Madam Chief, it's not a good proposition to go home. I'm a homeowner and a U.S. citizen. I really need your help. There is a liquor store in our neighborhood. People are hanging around. They park any way they want. And there are no signs on the street, like proper signs and signals on the roadways. Thank you very much for taking my comments. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Al, please stay on the line so my assistant can get more details from you. But I will say this. We have a fantastic mountain bike squad that patrols over in Southwest, and they get a lot of compliments from the residents. If there's a particular area in Southwest that we need to direct them to improve things, like in your area you're talking about, I'm sure the district commander will do that immediately. So just stay on the line, and my assistant will get your information.
Chief, I've been hearing some click it or ticket ads on the radio, and saying that D.C. police have a zero tolerance for people not wearing seatbelts in the cars. What is the law? Can you be pulled over in the district for not wearing a seatbelt? Is it a primary offense?
It is a primary offense in the district, yes.
And how many tickets have you issued?
You think I'm a walking encyclopedia, I'm sure. It's about 10,000 last year.
10,000 a year?
Yeah. For 7,000 to 10,000 has been about the average.
And then when you see accidents and fatalities, how big a role do seatbelts play, really?
I can tell you, for somebody who, prior to coming on the police department, did not wear my seatbelt and couldn't stand to wear my seatbelt. After I started in this job, and then more importantly, after I spent 2 years in the traffic fatality unit, I have seen enough that I don't pull out of my driveway without a seatbelt. And you see what could even be minor, relatively minor collisions that can have devastating consequences if you're not wearing your seatbelt. But it's extremely rare for us to see fatalities of a person who's wearing a seatbelt unless there's an extremely high speed rate.
Earlier, you mentioned ways people could submit tips to the police, and one of them is texting 50. And I remember when Mayor Fenty and you rolled this program out, you were on a panel with Philadelphia's mayor recently talking about how well this has worked. How well has it worked? How many tips are you getting? Are you reaching a different audience using this type of technology?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just look at anybody that has a family member that's under the age of 20, and it's hard to see them ever use the phone for anything other than texting. So it's a very important means of communication, but we've seen a 300% increase in the type of tips that come in. They're very accurate, very detailed. We wanted that tip line to be not so people could report a barking dog, but so that people can report gang members carrying guns, information about shootings and homicides. The whole point of the anonymous thing, if you have a regular complaint, we want you to call 911. But if you know information that'll help us, you know, get a gun off the street or apprehend somebody who's been involved in violent crimes and you just want to remain anonymous, send it into that 50411. Give us as much detail as possible because we can't get you back. We can't reply. So
You were at down at the D.C. Wilson building testifying about gun registration laws. It looks like the city council is going to move to making the registration process a little easier.
Cheaper, I think.
What are the problems facing residents trying to register guns, particularly the idea of training and re-registering?
Yeah, the biggest complaint we heard, and you know, initially when this was going through, we recommended against it because it's not consistent with what other jurisdictions do, is the training requirement. First of all, it costs them money, you know, additional money. And, you know, I don't think it's necessary. You can provide what you need to provide in terms of understanding safety of safe handling of the firearms and understanding the law in a video. And that's what most jurisdictions do. So it looks like we're going to move to now with the after the hearing that they're going to move to eliminate that. And I think that's the single biggest complaint we get.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here until 11 o'clock taking your calls and emails on Ask the Chief. Now look at traffic and weather on the.
We're back for the final minutes of Ask the Chief on WTOP. D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier with us till 11 o'clock. More of your phone calls to come at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can reach us as well on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, here's a question from our Facebook page, and this has to do with motorists who drive around school buses that are parked with their flashing lights on. This motorist is obviously concerned when she sees that. How is that enforced? And I know, is it against the law to pass a Metro bus when it is stopped to turn?
I don't know about that, Mark. I think I know for the school buses, it's like a $500 fine. I mean, it's a very hefty fine. And I know our officers are pretty aggressive about, enforcing that one with the school buses. I'm not sure what the exact regulation is on passing a Metro bus. I can tell you, typically that is the occasions when we see pedestrians being struck or collisions occur, unsafe passing of any stopped vehicle.
Let me ask you about it. It's been a year since the disorderly conduct law has changed in the district, and Councilmember Mendelson held a hearing and said that it seems to, from his point of view, be working out the way it was intended. Fewer arrests and fewer complaints against officers. Is that how you see it?
I agree. I think it's gone very well. We did a pretty hefty education campaign, and because the law, the way it's written, is not easy. I mean, there's a lot of facets to it, but yeah, good results.
There's been some questions asked about, and I know you don't speak for DPW and the people who write tickets, but when the ticket writers are out writing tickets, are they doing some kind of cross-check to see if the tag they're writing a ticket to could be possibly a stolen car?
Boy, we get that question a lot. Over the past 5 years, as automated systems have gotten better in the district, the ability to link those systems is going to be an important key to making sure that it happens. I know that there has been a break in that connection, that they're trying to make sure that that link is there so that when ticket writers actually write a citation, that they cross-check that with the stolen computer. So that, I know they're trying to repair that now, but there was a period of time when that was not the case.
Chief, let me ask you to update everybody on your contract. I know I ask you every month. I'm going to keep asking, I guess, until you sign or quit. What's the status of your contract negotiations for your personal contract?
All right, I'll
be
completely honest. You know, I've been a little busy dealing with crime in the last few weeks, and I've kind of
we appreciate that
not put much time into it, so I have to kind of get back on the ball. I still got a couple months left, so I need to get back on the ball.
But you intend on renewing your contract and staying, and the mayor has indicated he would like that as well.
Yeah, so I got to just get back on that.
Occupy DC, I know you're not the lead police agency down there, but everybody is kind of expecting people to be evicted or arrested and for park police to enforce the camping. You really have more interaction with them when they leave their encampment and go to other events around the city. How is the MPD relationship with the Occupy movement going, and do you think it's time for them to go?
Well, I think the relationship's is good 90%, 95% of the time. There are times when they do things when they're out at events this past weekend raises that tension. You know, we had the big event down, the Alfalfa Club event down at the Hilton over the weekend, and protesters trying to break through police line and throw, you know, water balloons and sparklers on guests who are coming to an event. Of course, that doesn't help. we don't appreciate that. But so far, our relationships, when they are, you know, abiding by the laws, are very good.
We actually had someone from Twitter tweet us, Hoya Dan, saying he was at that event and he felt like your officers really weren't in control when those people were trying to force their way through. And he wondered if you were satisfied with
I was there for the whole event and I watched everything that went on. And I tell you, we had about six city blocks locked down and we had complete control. They never were able to breach our perimeter and get in there and attack people inside the hotel, which I believe was their intention. Problem was is that a lot of the attendees came from outside and were dropped off outside the perimeter. And we really didn't have control of people walking in from 15 different directions coming on the outside of the perimeter. But I think the officers did a fantastic job keeping people from disrupting that event or attacking people in the hotel.
Let's squeeze another call in here. Carl, you're calling from Gainesville. Your question for the chief.
Hey, Chief Lanier. Last year on 10/25/11 at 10 a.m., I was involved in an accident. A lady pulled out in front of me, and I hit her. Now, I didn't get a ticket. And the cop didn't issue a ticket at that time of the day to either one of us. Then I get a letter in the mail for a ticket issued to me, no stop out of an alley at 1800 block of New York Avenue Northeast. Now, I was driving on New York Avenue. The car pulled out in front of me. Then I get the ticket. And I want to know how I get the ticket. The officer, like I said, the officer didn't issue a ticket that day.
Yeah, I have. If you want to stay on the line, I'll get your information. I certainly would encourage you to appeal if that's the circumstances and it was an MPD officer that wrote it. But if you stay on the line, I'll look into it for you.
Chief, let me ask you about a Supreme Court decision relating to a D.C. police investigation where your officers put a GPS tracking device on a drug dealer's car that led officers to a house where he had drugs and weapons and money stashed. He was sentenced to life in prison. He appealed, saying that you guys didn't have a valid warrant. The Supreme Court ruled that police can't use a tracking device without a warrant to track the comings and goings of suspects. How does that impact your ability to police?
Well, I'd say there's little impact on us, but I just want to make sure people are clear on that. That was a joint investigation with the federal agencies, and there was no warrant requirement. But the officers got a warrant out of abundance of caution. They got a warrant when it wasn't needed. The problem was the warrant had expired by, I think, 2 days. So we really didn't think there was any problem with it because the warrant wasn't even necessary, and that's how this whole case came about. But we have a lot of tools at our disposal to investigate crimes. Obviously, that was a very useful tool, but we have others.
Will this lead to this suspect who's still in jail being released from jail?
You know, I don't know the results. That's a legal question.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here every month for Ask the Chief. Chief, thanks very much for
coming
in. Now another look at traffic and weather on the 8th.